This is the introduction for Decatur, Part 1.
Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Tuesday, October 16th, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, City Seeks Other Water Sources, from Decatur Government. Dredging may not supply enough reserves, officials say. This article is by Tom Lissy from Decatur. The dredging of Lake Decatur has already helped the city pass a previous goal of having 6 months of water available in case of a drought, but now officials say that may not be enough. A new study approved unanimously by the Decatur City Council on Monday night will identify potential underground water sources nearby that can replenish Lake Decatur if and when the Sangamon River, the source of the lake's water, stays dry for too long. City staff cited a recommendation from Illinois State Water Survey for a 10-month supply of reserves for the city, a proposal that came after several droughts in 2011 and 2012. Those droughts and their threat to the Decatur economy spurred the council in 2014 to approve a $91 million dredging project that began later that year. City staff expect Decatur will have access to almost 8 months of water supply once the work wraps up next year. The Herald and Review reported in September that contracting crews discovered in 2017 that the storage basin for the dredged sediment had filled faster than the project's engineer's design plan had anticipated. Extra work to fix the problem added $2.7 million in unforeseen costs to the project, according to documents the Herald and Review obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. Due to savings elsewhere, the unanticipated work did not add to the city's budgeted costs, officials have said, and the project is still set to end on schedule. By the time the dredging is complete, council members should also have the results of the study they approved Monday from Bloomington, Indiana-based engineering firm Interra Inc. The study, for which the council approved spending $277,324, drew some pushback from Councilman Pat McDaniel, who cited previous evaluations of the Decatur water supply. "How many water studies have we had? Now we're going to do another one," said McDaniel, who ultimately voted in favor of the measure. "This has been studied to death. We know we have a problem." Public Works Director Matt Newell said he agreed the city had commissioned a lot of studies, but those identified nearby sources that ended up being contaminated. "This report will bring back to the City Council options on how to fill the gap, and it will also determine what the gap is," he said. The study, set to be completed by March, will also provide a more comprehensive recommendation for the city on how much of a reserve is best for Decatur, Newell said. The Public Works Director noted other central Illinois cities have built a larger reserve, like Springfield, which has an 18-month water supply, he said. Lake Decatur reached its lowest levels since the 1980s during the 2012 drought, and city officials scrambled to implement measures for residents to conserve water that summer. City staff also worked to create a temporary pipeline to Lake Tokorozawa, a privately owned water source on the city's south side, to pump water into Lake Decatur if the drought persisted. City officials never ended up needing to use that measure 6 years ago, and it is no longer in place. A lucky 5-inch downfall of rain in September all but ended the drought conditions, thanks to a weather system from Hurricane Isaac that traveled to Illinois that year. But of all the cities in the region, the stakes are arguably higher in Decatur, where industrial businesses use much of the water supplied by the lake. Two of the area's largest employers, Archer Daniels Midland Company and Tate & Lyle, rely on Lake Decatur water for production processes. In some months during the 2012 drought, Decatur used nearly double the amount of water as Champaign or Springfield, two cities with larger populations, according to a 2017 report from the Illinois State Water Survey. The search for more water will not include the possibility of more lake dredging, Newell said. I think we've dredged all we can dredge. There's really not more sediment we can get out of the lake, he said after the meeting. City officials expect the dredging project will add 52 more days of city water supply when the project ends, increasing the lake's capacity by 30%. And moving on to our next article on the front page as well, event offers career pretest. Milliken invites students to learn about education field. This article is by Valerie Wells from Decatur. Middle school was an important milestone in Karen Hauser's life. Now a junior at MacArthur High School, she's already decided her career and her own experience was the catalyst. Her ambition led her to the Tomorrow's Teachers Conference at Milliken University on Monday, where high school students considering a teaching career, a field dealing with a shortage across Illinois, are invited to learn what it's like to be an education major. I find middle schools to be the most influential time in a child's life, Karen said. In my experience, middle school, as a year-round athlete, I played soccer, basketball, track. If it was in the school, I did it. Then I went to high school and I was like, I'm going to do all these sports. And everyone was like, if we win, we've got to hit it hard. And I was just in it for the fun. She also tried drama club on a whim, and when she got a small part in a production, and she fell in love with theater. Her dream is to be a middle school English teacher and to combine that with theater in middle school, so kids like her will find their niche earlier than she did, she said. On Monday, she learned a little bit more about what that will be like. The Tomorrow's Teachers Conference hosted 83 students from as far away as Chicago and Carbondale, as well as local teens, attended and spent the day in sessions designed to show them a day in the life of an education major. 1 hour of the day is devoted to students' particular areas of interest, so students interested in teaching music can spend the hour exploring a class for music education. Students who want to teach English as a second language can spend the hour in a bilingual education class, and so on. Each content area is focused on something to give our visiting students a taste of what it's like, said Christy Magulius, director of Milliken School of Education. There is not an area that is not in need right now. Every education area is an area of need. Absolutely, they'll get a job in all areas. Illinois has 1,400 unfilled teaching positions, she said, and schools of education are seeing fewer students applying. The shortage is acute, and while science, math, and early childhood are particularly in need, teachers are needed in every area. Some of that is due to the increased demands on teachers. We keep asking teachers to do more. We keep pushing them to do more and more, and we give them fewer resources to do it, Magulius said. The interest isn't there anymore. These students are going through kindergarten through 12th grade listening to teachers who may be telling them not to go into the field because it's not what they thought it would be. The great thing is we have 83 students here who are from the Chicago suburbs to Carbondale. For Dalton Collins, a Meridian graduate, one thing that convinced him to choose teaching was that he grew up surrounded by female teachers and principals, and he said he realized that more men are needed in the field. Some of these kids need male role models, Dalton said. Somebody's got to make a bit of a change, one person at a time. It's good seeing so many guys here at the conference. A lot of the classes I have are mostly women, too. Maggie Comerford, a senior elementary education major at Milliken, said if a person has a passion for teaching, nothing else matters. Comerford, also a Meridian graduate, was one of the speakers in a student panel for the high school visitors, answering questions about life at Milliken and daily life as an education major. You can't imagine doing anything else, Comerford said. From second grade, it's what do you want to do when you grow up, and it's always been a teacher. To be a teacher, you just need to have the heart to be a teacher. And there's a small sidebar that accompanies this article. It's called Illinois Teacher Shortage. The Illinois State Board of Education's 2018 report on the number of open teaching jobs, 1,401 teaching positions, 1,300 school support positions, 113 licensed staff other than teachers, and 79 administrative positions. There are also several photographs that accompany this story. MacArthur High School student Antoine Brown reacts while taking a virtual field trip through the solar system along with Rochester High School student Abby Connor, middle, Peoria Christian High School student Madison Fisher, far right, and other students attending the Tomorrow's Teacher Conference in the New Technology Studio at Millikan University Monday. Another photo, Assistant Professor Chris Cummings leads a team-building exercise for high school students participating in the Tomorrow's Teacher Conference in the Millikan campus Monday. And finally, our last photo, MacArthur High School students Shantez Bertley, left, and Kylia Clark, middle, explore a Google Expeditions immersive education app led by educational technology specialist Eric McKinney during the Tomorrow's Teachers Conference in the New Technology Studio at Millikan University Monday. Moving on to Macon County business, smiles are a family legacy for dentists. Three generations help patients at Stone Dental, Chrisman and Wise, by Paul Sweech, Mount Zion. When Marcy Neighbor goes to the dentist, she's visiting family. It's like you become part of the family when you're here, Neighbor said this week before an appointment at Stone Dental in Mount Zion, southeast of Decatur. Neighbor has been treated by three generations of doctors Stone. I've been coming here since I was in the third or fourth grade, said Neighbor 46 of Decatur. I've seen Daddy Stone, Dr. Howard Stone, young Dr. Stone, Dr. Charles Stone, and Dr. Brittany Stone Keck Flory. Stone Dental at 108 Ashland Avenue, with the recent addition of Keck Flory, is the latest general dental practice in Illinois to expand to a third generation in the same family. While it isn't common, there are other third-generation dental practices in Illinois, according to the Illinois State Dental Society. Among them is Chrisman & Wise Cosmetic and General Dentistry, 207 South Prospect Road, Bloomington. It was started in 1922 in downtown Bloomington by Dr. E.W. Chrisman, who was joined in 1946 by his son, Dr. Tony Chrisman, who was joined in 1976 by his son, Dr. J. Chrisman. It's been very rewarding, said Chrisman. For years, I saw patients who saw my grandfather, then my father, and followed me into my practice. We've had generations of patients. The value is the continuity of care, he said. Patients know to expect excellent care and timely service. With fewer independent dental practices, three-generation practices will become more uncommon, said Charles Stone, 58 of Mount Zion, who is Howard Stone's son and Keck Flory's father. That makes the addition of Keck Flory, 26, of Mount Zion even more noteworthy, he said. It's very exciting, Neighbor said. We watch Brittany grow up. I work in my grandpa's old operatory, Keck Flory said. I redid it. I'm in grandpa's old room, but now it's mine. It's a nice feeling of homeness. Howard Stone, 89, of Decatur, a Clinton native, pursued dentistry because a family friend was a dentist. He enjoyed science and worked well with his fingers. After graduating from the University of Illinois in Chicago College of Dentistry, he served in the U.S. Air Force Dental Corps before opening an independent general dentistry practice in Clinton in 1955. He moved the practice to Decatur in 1962 and was joined in 1986 by his son Charles Stone, after he graduated from Southern Illinois University School of Medicine in Alton. I had an aptitude for biology and dentistry, Charles Stone said of his career choice. I also admired my dad, he said. When I would go out in the community, people would know my dad, and he was very well thought of. People would say, no offense, but I hate going to the dentist, but I love going to your dad. The key to being a good dentist is to realize that people are attached to the teeth, Charles Stone said. The Stones relocated the practice to its current location in 1993. While Howard Stone retired in December 1999, he worked part-time until 3 years ago when the Macon County Health Department Dental Clinic and with Dental Sealants and More, a program to provide preventive dental care to children receiving free or reduced-price school lunches. Howard Stone also served 40 years on the Macon County Board of Health and helped start that county health department's dental clinic, where Charles Stone also treated patients. Charles Stone chaired Give Kids a Smile Day, to provide cleanings and fillings to children whose families couldn't otherwise afford it. I saw the need at the health department, he said. What we decided to do as a dental society was to bring kids to our offices and treat them free of charge. For some families, the problem isn't lack of access, but lack of appreciation of the benefits of good oral health, the Stone said. The perception is, if it doesn't hurt, there's nothing wrong, Charles Stone said. But preventive care is necessary to prevent pain. Keck Flory graduated from SIU School of Dental Medicine in June and joined her father in practice shortly thereafter. I watched my dad and grandpa, she said, and I'm kind of a talker, so I needed to be in a medical profession with people where I could talk. I think taking out decay and restoring it back is really fun, she said. Charles Stone said, that little act will keep people from being absolutely miserable. Over the years, Stone Dental has kept up to date with dental technology advances, but the focus hasn't changed. We have real relationships with our patients, said Charles Stone, who estimates that the practice has 3,000 patients. We get to see people year after year after year. We know these people, not just their teeth. I don't like coming to the dentist, but I like coming here because I know they will take good care of us, neighbor said. Chrisman said, I've been doing this for 40 plus years, and I have helped people to feel better about themselves. That's fun to do. Our patients, Charles Stone said, are a part of our family. So the sidebar article here, sink your teeth into this, patients and dentists can be better. Our thanks to the following for their thoughts. And they list the Stones, the Chrismans, Dr. Scott Hume, Bloomington, Dr. Mike Milligan, Bloomington. How we can be better patients, brush and floss regularly, seek regular dental treatment so little problems don't turn into big problems. Do what your dental hygienist tells you to do. Know that losing teeth isn't a natural part of aging. It's a sign of disease and can be prevented. Recognize that poor oral health can negatively impact the rest of your body. How dentists can improve. Listen to your patients. Try to get to know them and understand them as individuals, not just as patients. Treat them as you would want to be treated. Respect their time and budgets. Stay up to date with advances in dentistry. Learn more about the connection between oral health and overall health. And the photo that accompanies this article is Dr. Brittany Keck Flory, her father, Dr. Charles Stone, sent her, and her grandfather, Dr. Howard Stone, make up three generations of dentists at Stone Dental in Mount Zion. Keck Flory recently joined Charles Stone in the practice that Howard Stone began in 1955. The eldest Stone is retired. Moving on to the local and state page, this is page A3. Murder, an attempted murder, retrial set. Case from 2009, fatal and near-fatal mob beatings of two men by Tony Reed from Decatur. Prosecutors are trying to prove, again, that Deontay O. Johnson helped a teenage mob kick and punch one random victim to death and tried to do the same to another in two savage attacks in Decatur 9 years ago. Johnson, now 23 years old and 14 at the time, pleaded not guilty in his first trial in October 2011 and insisted police had targeted the wrong person. A jury ruled otherwise and Johnson was found guilty and sentenced to 65 years in prison. 45 years for murder and 20 years for attempted murder, both sentences to run consecutively. But Johnson was back in Macon County Circuit Court on Monday, hoping a new jury will see the case differently. He's getting a retrial after appeal judges reconsidered his conviction in October 2013. The appellate court ruled the trial judge should not have transferred Johnson's case to adult court without having first considered treatment alternatives in the juvenile justice system. That aspect of the case had been reconsidered at a court hearing in September 2012, and the original decision was upheld, but the new trial must still go ahead. Johnson's half-brother, Elliot T. Murphy, 16 at the time, was described as a leader of the mob of some nine teens and had also been convicted of murder and attempted murder in a joint trial with Johnson, as was sentenced to a combined total of 80 years in prison. He appealed and was also granted a new trial held in April 2017. convicted of both murder and attempted murder again. This time he was sentenced to a combined total of 55 years in prison. Outlining the prosecution case Monday against Johnson, First Assistant State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke, who prosecuted the case the first time, described how the teen mob, spoiling for a fight, had come across 61-year-old Jerry Newingham as he cycled home from work on August 24, 2009. He was intercepted in the 500 block of West Sawyer Street, and Kroenke said Johnson struck the first blow. The defendant rushed across the street and struck Jerry Newingham with a closed fist on the jaw as hard as he could and knocked him out. Jerry never moved again. She described the teens kicking and beating his body and stomping the victim's head multiple times. He died in a hospital 12 days later. The second victim, who survived, was attacked barely an hour after the first. Kroenke described the mob finding the then 46-year-old Kevin Wilson resting on a picnic table in Garfield Park. She said Johnson knocked Wilson out before the mob set upon him in the same way they had beaten and stomped Newingham. Wilson spent 25 days in the hospital and came close to dying, Kroenke added. Defense attorney Timothy Tai urged the jury to carefully consider the evidence due to be heard about Johnson's actual involvement. Tai said just being one in a crowd didn't make him guilty. I believe the evidence will be conflicting at best as to what, if any, contribution this particular person actually made to any of this, he said. Three other teenagers are serving 20-year prison sentences in connection with the attacks. Brandon White and twin brothers Diedrick and Frederick Roan all pleaded guilty to first-degree murder. The trial continues today. And on to the briefs section on this same page. Police booms part of training from Decatur. The Decatur Police Department said booming noises heard in South Shores on Monday afternoon are the result of a training exercise. Residents reported hearing the noises around 2 p.m. Police said explosives were being detonated for officers to study the aftermath and to practice evidence collection, and said no residents should be alarmed. Further information about the training exercise was not immediately available Monday afternoon. Traffic stop yields drug possession charge from Mount Zion. A 23-year-old Decatur man faces a drug possession charge after a traffic stop by a Mount Zion police officer on Sunday morning. Lieutenant Mike Foster said an officer observed a 2004 Chevrolet Impala in the area of Wildwood Drive near Woodland Drive at 11:07 a.m., but a records check showed the license registered to a 1997 Chevrolet sedan. The officer made a traffic stop, and while taking inventory of the vehicle, the officer found a bag of white, crystal-like substance that the field test tested positive for 1.5 grams of methamphetamine, Foster said. The man was booked into Macon County Jail on a preliminary charge of possession of methamphetamine less than 5 grams, Foster said. He also was cited for improper vehicle registration, driving with a suspended license, and no insurance. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. Police find dice, not illegal drugs. From Decatur, a police patrol tipped to what appeared to be illegal drug activity in Decatur on Sunday evening, instead walked up on a group of male gamblers illegally shooting dice for money, police said. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said six people were gathered in a circle and engaged in the gambling on a concrete slab behind a vacant house in the 800 block of East Whitmer Street. At the approach of the officers, three of the six took off running, and three didn't run, Copeland said. The three that stuck around were aged 18, 19, and 17. They were all issued notices to appear in court for violating city ordinances on illegal gambling, Copeland said. No foul play suspected in girl's death, from Clinton. The investigation into the death of a 12-year-old Clinton girl last week is ongoing, but DeWitt County Coroner Randy Rice said Monday that foul play is not suspected. Daphne J. Peevler, a Clinton Junior High School student, was found unresponsive, and Clinton police and emergency medical crews were called at 6:36 a.m. Friday to her home in the 400 block of North Maple Street. She was later pronounced dead at the scene. Investigators have not released any additional information. Her funeral will be today in Clinton. The coroner's office is being assisted by the DeWitt County Sheriff's Office and Illinois State Police Crime Scene Services. Police: mom accuses son of theft, Decatur. A 59-year-old Decatur woman suspects her son, age 42, of stealing more than $500 worth of property from her home, police said. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said the woman reported jewelry, a computer, and other items had been taken from her house on the city's east side between October 1st and Sunday. Speaking Monday, Copeland said detectives wanted to interview the son, but had not been able to talk to him yet about the circumstances. And moving on to a story called "The Library Annex Building Demolition Begins Today" by Jalen Cook from Decatur. Demolition of the two-story annex building in the Decatur Public Library parking lot will begin today, the library said Monday. Construction fencing will be placed around the annex, the library said in a post on its Facebook page. Parking at the library's 130 North Franklin Street facility will be limited to the easternmost sections of the parking lot, excluding designated handicapped spaces. Additional parking will be available along East Main Street and at the parking garage at the corner of Main and Franklin Streets. The demolition work may take 2 months to complete, the library said. The Decatur City Council unanimously approved a $123,500 bid from Steve's Trucking, Inc. to tear down the dilapidated, mold-filled building during its Monday, October 1st meeting. The annex was built in 1968 as the Automotive Center for Sears and was later converted into the Village Mall in 1999 after the department store moved to its now closed Hickory Point Mall location in Forsyth. The library reclaimed control of the annex from the Village Mall's developer in 2006, citing legal issues, and most of its tenants had left by 2008. The city took ownership of the building in May 2016 after months of negotiations. And there is a photo that accompanies this article. It's an overhead shot of the annex building with some cars in front. Demolition of the Decatur Public Library annex building will begin on Tuesday. The building has been vacant since the library kicked out businesses in 2008. All right, well, this brings us to the end of this session. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, October 16th, 2018. Please stay tuned.